clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, will look back in games against Celtic and Hearts. We'll discuss the departure of Andy Rose, look ahead to St Johnstone away on Saturday, and see what else takes our fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Jay, I'll start with yourself, and our analysis of the Hearts game is going to be very in-depth, as you could imagine, for three guys that weren't actually at the game. But a 1-0 defeat. Again, narrow margins, the second 1-0 defeat to Hearts this season. But given the lift that we got from the late equaliser against Celtic and the fact that Hearts were seven games without a victory, we could have maybe hoped to sneak a point, but I guess a defeat was always a very strong possibility, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's still a very, very difficult place to go, regardless of, you know, what kind of form Hearts are on at that any one time. It's probably one of my favourite stadiums, if not, you know, my favourite in Scotland, just for kind of layout and even atmosphere and things like that. So it's a difficult place to go. It could be quite intimidating. You know, as you said, we weren't there. I think it actually kind of highlights, you know, something we've spoke on the podcast before. I'm not sure how it ended up being on the day, but the idea you couldn't buy tickets or you had to buy your ticket in advance. So on Saturday morning when I found out I could possibly go, and I sent a wee text to Joe, our mate Joe, who was going, and he texts back to say, well, I think it was about 10 to 1 at this point, and he texts me back and says, well, you've got 10 minutes to get to Firth Park to get your ticket, otherwise you can't go. So that kind of sums up that whole situation where those of us who, you know, for whatever reason had to wait until match day and then found out that we just couldn't make it. But that said, it sounds as though we kind of maybe got a bit lucky with that. Didn't sound a fantastic game. I know that it's one of those ones where there seems to be a lot of differing opinion. Again, just trying to kind of recycle other people's opinions here. But, you know, there seems to be those saying that we kind of controlled the game and had a lot of possession, but just didn't create anything. Other people just saying that it was kind of back to quite a mediocre performance. It's like all these things, it's probably somewhere in between. But from what I did see, I kind of sympathise with Curtis Main a little bit. I don't think it's a foul. I can see why the foul's maybe given, his arms perhaps up on the shoulder of the defender, and the defender does stumble at that, you know, particular time. But it's a great finish by Main, and it just kind of, little things like that can kind of make or break your season a bit, because we spoke at length about how somebody like Curtis Main has maybe looked a little void of confidence, hasn't really been cutting it, certainly hasn't been scoring goals, and yet he pops up with a great finish like that. And if that goal stands, that could be the kind of spark for his confidence going forward. And as it is, the goal gets ruled off and we go on and lose 1-0. So maybe that kind of tells you a little bit about our season, just how certain decisions have went our way and things like that. But overall, it just looked quite a mediocre game, perhaps an average performance, which isn't, you know, necessarily a criticism, because it is a difficult place to go. But the 1-0 defeats, we seem to be really good at those. We seem to be solid enough. We seem to be able to handle, you know, most teams in terms of what they have to offer up front. Maybe not at Ibrox a few weeks ago, but certainly by and large, you look at some of the games that we've lost to so-called higher quality opposition, you know, Pittodrie, Hearts, Kilmarnock, etc. And it's usually by the odd goal. And that's a worry, because it's all very well being strong enough at the back and not losing a lot of goals. Even last season with Trevor Carson keeping, you know, a great number of clean sheets. But when you're not scoring goals, there's an issue there. And we just don't have anybody that I can see that seems to, you know, Turnbull's came in, scored a couple of goals, and he has got a bit of a creative spark. But we're just not scoring enough goals. And that's the big thing to come for me, you know, as somebody who wasn't at the game. I think Saturday just kind of speaks volumes to me in terms of, even when we go to somewhere like Tynecastle and perhaps do have a good, you know, share of possession and come up against a side who don't score a lot of goals on the day, we get nil as usual. And that's something we really, really need to get past. Whether it's bringing somebody else in January or not, I'm not sure. But we can't continue to continually, you know, score as few goals as we do.
Buster, obviously, having not been at the game, we can only go on the major incidents that we saw. And Curtis Main has a goal disallowed. I don't know, to be honest, I think the Hearts goalkeeper stopped by the time he strikes the ball, but anyway, it would have been a pretty fantastic finish, it must be said, if it had been allowed to stand. The Hearts goal, Mark Gillespie caught out somewhat. He kind of comes to collect the ball, but he's caught in two minds, and Hearts are able to take advantage there.
Yeah, as you say, you know, obviously we weren't there. I had things on and ended up not even paying attention to the game while it was on. It wasn't until it was finished that I really found out what the final, you know, what the final score was, basically. But as you say, watching back in the highlights certainly make it seem as we did a lot better than some of the opinions I've heard anyway. But as you say, I think that the major thing for the highlights for me was, you know, maybe Gillespie let himself down a wee bit. He's shown so far that he's more than capable of being our number one when needed, you know, whether it be if Trevor's injured for the rest of the season like he is, or if he was getting sold. But he's sort of swithered about coming for a cross there, and, you know, the Hearts boys got in and scored the goal with a kind of rubbish header, to be fair. But I think that was, you know, that was my biggest disappointment just for watching the highlights, was that, you know, he's let himself down a wee bit there. You know, these things happen to every goalkeeper, but as I say, going by the highlights there, I'm not really too sure whether the Hearts goalie was trying for that shot, but as you say, the whistle had gone anyway, and again, for the opinions I'm hearing, it was a pretty poor performance. I tried to go on the YouTube channel and find the interviews, you know, the post-game interviews, but they don't seem to be on there, and I think they're on Twitter somewhere, but I've no bother to go through.
Yeah, there's the mix zone. Do you want to guess what the three players were that were used for the mix zone?
It'll be, I'll just guess, Richard Tate.
One out of three.
Grimmie.
Two out of three.
And let me think who will the other one be. Alan Campbell.
No, Alan Campbell was on the bench.
It'll be Gillespie or McHugh, is my guess, because I've not seen it either.
It'll be Callum McHugh, I think, can I?
No, you're both wrong, but while you were doing that, I've...
You've got the check.
Yes. Hold on. Very professional, as always, this.
That's all right. The one thing I love about Grimmie is he sounds like a 60-year-old man. It's brilliant.
It's a kind of that between a cross of that and a Dalek.
A 60-year-old Dalek.
Kelly D was the other one.
Yeah.
He'd obviously been out for a while, so he regained his shift on the... And the story of the match just went up tonight as well. We'll possibly give a game-by-game review of the story of the match, but it's about 3 minutes long, and God knows how they managed to get 3 minutes out of what just seems to be midfield challenges and comfortable headers gathered by goalkeepers.
Well,
it wasn't the most
longer.
Entertaining one.
It is longer than the highlights, definitely. The highlights were 2 minutes and 43 seconds or something, because I remember seeing that one thinking, there couldn't have been much happened in this game. But if the thing's 3 minutes long, it's definitely longer than the highlights then.
Well, we've got to talk about the game that came before the Hearts game and the one each draw against Celtic. Jay, it was a first half where we could have went in 3 or 4 nil down. Mark Gillespie made a great save from Lee Griffiths' penalty. Celtic had a goal ruled out through Benkovic as well, possibly unjustly. We did manage to keep in the game. In the second half, Celtic, it became apparent the 7 changes they had made. They lost their rhythm, they lost the flow of the game, and we just kind of ground our way into it. And with 2 minutes to go, Danny Johnson, a fantastic strike. Celtic, not very happy about it, but I think Christian Gamboa is pretty soft in that instance. Great finish from Johnson. We steal a point at the death. And happy days against Steve. You look at Celtic and the ridiculous amount of resources they have available to them. They made 7 changes, but that wasn't really going to make it a fair game in any sort of way. So you've got to just do what you need to do to stay in these games. We managed to do that. We've got a point for the third time in a row against Celtic in the league at Fir Park. It's certainly a point earned.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a decent performance. You know, I'm not sure I'm convinced that, you know, we could have been 3 or 4 down at half time. You know, yes, you've got the penalty and the disallowed goal, but I think by and large Celtic, you know, didn't trouble. You know, I think I understand what you're saying, but I think when you kind of phrase it like that, it makes it sound as though we were under the cosh, when in reality I don't think Celtic, you know, really troubled Gillespie at all, apart from the penalty, which, you know, as good a save as it was, particularly his reactions to get rid of it, was also quite a poor penalty by Griffiths. Overall, I thought we deserved the point because of the shift we put in the second half. Of course, Celtic are going to come at you and they're going to, you know, maybe look a bit more dangerous on the ball because they have, you know, resources that we will never, ever, ever have. You know, that league table that kind of went up, you know, a week or two ago, showing, you know, just how big the gulf is. You know, we all know it exists, but I think when you kind of see it put in those kind of terms, it's unbelievable. So even just getting a point against a team with that amount of resources, regardless of the changes they've made, is a fantastic achievement. But I thought we merited it. I thought the second half, we worked incredibly hard. There was a spell of, you know, 5-10 minutes where it was just hilarious watching Celtic try to keep the ball in the park while passing it about at the back. And I just thought we deserved the point overall. And I'll be honest, I think it was a penalty. I think Benkovic's goal was perfectly fine. And I think Danny Johnson fouled the Celtic player in the build-up to our goal. And I absolutely love that all those things exist. You know, there seems to be this idea that we need to try and be like, no, you know, get the claret number tinted specs on and go, no, it wasn't a foul by Johnson, or, you know, that kind of thing. I love the fact that, you know, we got decisions going our way, because it just doesn't happen when you play Rangers and Celtic. So the fact that we actually got those decisions going our way for the first time, you know, one game in maybe 50 or 100, is absolutely brilliant. And that's just added to my enjoyment of getting the late equaliser.
Yeah, Buster, the seethe was quite delicious in the aftermath of that game. Obviously, added to that was the fact that you've got, 6,000 fans behind the goal in the south stand. Maybe not quite as many as that, but singing "We Shall Not Be Moved," and then Danny Johnson puts one in the bottom corner, and suddenly they're moved. It couldn't have been any better. In fact, I would describe it as kind of similar to when they were all doing the huddle in one of the games, and Muddle went up the park and scored to equalise. I think the game was 3-3. It was a kind of end of season affair, but. Yeah, it was pretty spectacular to gain a share of the spoils. I didn't really see the goal coming, it must be said, but we did. We kind of ground our way into the game, and that was a wee bit of a surprise given the wholesale changes Stephen Robinson made.
I think, you know, Jay's hurt in the head there when it comes to the, you know, the fouls and what was what. A bit like yourself, I think that Johnson's challenge, or sorry, was it Johnson, whoever challenged Gamboa anyway, I thought that Gamboa was a bit soft, as you said, Sparra, but I think that we were lucky to, you don't get the decisions, basically, we were lucky to get that against Celtic. And, you know, as you said, everything else was, it was the last 20 minutes, whatever, you could sort of see it coming, but like you said, I'm not sure how the goal was going to come about. Watching Celtic completely fuck up their goal kicks, trying to play out for the back. I mean, I don't know why they insist in doing that. You know, as we've said, they've got the biggest resources in the league by a mile. If they can just bypass, you know, the fullbacks, get to somebody in the midfield rather than try to get to the fullbacks, but kept constantly kicking out, and I thought their chance is going to come here for putting a bit of pressure on the fullbacks every time they give them the ball. And, you know, that's where it looked like it was going to come from, but what a finish for Danny Johnson. The angle he was at, it was, you know, Craig Gordon's a great goalkeeper. I don't want to say short stopper, because every goalkeeper's a great short stopper, but Craig Gordon's, you know, a great goalkeeper in general, and to beat somebody his calibre for that tight an angle, right in that bottom corner, it was absolutely brilliant. It was unreal. And as you say, the only thing possibly better than stealing a point at the end was coming home and reading all the anger and the tear fucking filled replies on Twitter to everything that a Muddle account had said.
It's just incredible, you know, for a club that enjoys so much success, you think that there would be, you know, just the slightest bit of, I don't know, you know, respect or decency when they, you know, they lose a late goal, or, you know, they drop points to a side with such you know, it's such a disparity in resources. But I, you know, they're amongst the worst for just the absolute toys out the pram, because they just, it's incredible, you know, the God-given right to take 3 points against everyone they play. It just adds to the joy, you know, even the fact that, you know, imagine celebrating a draw. This from the fans who, you know, celebrated a draw last season, you know, well, last minute penalty against us. They're an absolute farce. So that just makes it even better that we got the late equaliser.
I was just going to mention another bizarre thing in the aftermath of the game was that Jay has almost forged himself a career in photography.
Well, I seen there was many a request for you to make the prints. I was thinking, just save it and print it yourself, guys. But you know,
I don't know whether it's just because obviously like the original will be much better quality, but Sparrow will tell you it was literally a case of, oh, 2 seconds, Sparrow, that was a cool photo, and then just walk on. And next thing you know, it's like a semi-viral hit on Twitter. So I need to keep that in mind and maybe take up a bit of photography for no one.
Yeah, that's it. You maybe contact your phone manufacturer and show the success you've achieved using that camera phone and take it from there.
It's my mod's old phone that I got because I lost mine in Albania as well. So it's all the mod cons for us top photographers.
it's got that vintage look to it, it must be said. It's just moving on to the St Johnstone game on Saturday. It's the usual pattern when we go to McDermott Park. I talk about how Tommy Wright's done a fantastic job. He continues to do a fantastic job, despite the fact last season we thought, oh, well, they finally finished in the bottom six. That'll be St Johnstone on the wane. They then visited us at Fir Park in the bottom six fixtures and beat us 5-1. Absolutely tore us apart a couple of weeks before the cup final. This season, I think that's them now, 6 or 7 in a row where they've avoided defeat, winning 6 of these games. It's just a very, very consistent side under Wright. He's been rewarded with another couple of years, which will take him up to 9 years in charge at McDermott Park. This is a difficult one, Buster, to see how we're going to get a positive result from.
You know, McDermott Park's one of those places I don't think we have much success in general. You know, you could probably check the actual results of the years and kill me off, aye.
My interview ones was clearly on a whim, but 2013 in November was the last time that we got all 3 points at McDermott Park. So over 6 years. Oh no, hold on. It's 2018. Over 5 years. So that's got a result.
Well, as you say, it's. I think the chat is that we're going to go up there anyway and, you know, ride it out. But it's not a place I enjoy going. We never ever seem to get a decent result. And St Johnstone themselves, as you say, last year you thought that was maybe them. They'd hit their wee purple patch and they were coming back down to reality. But until this season when they played us at Fir Park, I think they were maybe a couple of points ahead of us. They beat us at Fir Park and have just gone from strength to strength since. You know, that one result seemed to turn our season round. So it's not a game I would say with no chance of getting anything, but you know, history and, as I say, our previous up there tell you otherwise. But you know, we'll go and see what happens and see how it plays out.
Yeah, Jay, the bugbear of the Celtic and Hearts games is Stephen Robinson continues to seem to be completely unaware of what his strongest 11 is. I know we picked up a couple injuries and maybe should have actually made more of a point of going over that against Celtic. We lost Peter Hartley and Liam Donnelly within the first 10 minutes. Adam Livingston then gets on and he pulls up with cramp before the end of the game. After the match, Stephen Robinson mentioned Liam Donnelly had to get himself properly fit, which is just such a bizarre thing to hear for a guy that's a professional footballer. He's been at the club long enough now to surely establish that his fitness levels are matched by his surroundings, and he just clearly isn't able to do that. So there's a responsibility of the player to really work hard on getting himself up to speed. The manager said the same about Livingston as well, which is maybe different circumstances, but again, he'll look at guys like Alan Campbell and Chris Cadden, David Turnbull, who have come in from the reserves or the under-20s and got up to speed pretty quickly. the onus is on Adam Livingston to do the same. But that being said, you look at the starting 11 for the Livingston game, you then make five changes for the Celtic game, then there's three or four changes for the Hearts game at the weekend. Some of them enforced, some of them not. We need to, if we're going to find consistency, I think we need to find consistency in the starting 11 as well. There shouldn't be this massive guessing game or I don't know what the hell we're going to do today or how the hell we're going to set up. The debate before the Celtic game was almost, it was just weird actually. What Motherwell team are we going to get? Not even what Motherwell team in terms of mindset, what Motherwell team in general? And then he plucks Connor Salmon out there for, what, when was the last time he'd been on? Was it Aberdeen in September? It just, so much of it is so, so strange.
Yeah, I do think at times, regardless of kind of opinions on Robinson, how good a job he's doing, I think at times it can be a bit of his own, you know, worst enemy. In terms of, particularly in terms of kind of comments and stuff like that, we've had recently the kind of resurgence of the, you know, lamenting the injuries we've had because it's meant he's had to play more footballers. You know, I think at times I actually find that a little bit strange, you know. As well as that, you've also got a lot of stuff about the budget, for example. I know that's been a bit of a bugbear of yours, Sparrow, the fact that, you know, when things aren't going our way, you know, it's almost like a go-to excuse will be the fact that we've got, you know, lowly resources, and yet, you know, we're losing to teams like Kilmarnock, like Livingston. You know, you're saying that St Johnstone will be a difficult place to go on Saturday. I can't imagine St Johnstone have a wildly, you know, massive budget compared to ourselves. So, you know, I often find it strange the fact that as much emphasis as we put on the media team and their output and the amount of input we must have in specific interviews and press conferences, you just need to look at when we drew with Livingston and every player and the manager was coming out with a stop the rot comment. So we obviously do put input into the, you know, the things that are said and the sort of what's kind of discussed in these interviews. Even the fact that we just don't even record press conferences anymore, it's a specific one-on-one interviews. So I find it strange, you know, that no one's kind of taken Robinson aside and said, maybe chill out on the budget stuff, or, you know, stop saying that you hate when you have to play too many footballers, because that's kind of what fans want to see. In terms of the actual comments regarding fitness, I did find that,
sorry, hold on. It was kind of one of these comments that I digested. That was quite funny, and then thought about it a wee bit more and thought that was very funny actually, so it merited a laugh.
But I was just going to say, in terms of the actual fitness thing, I find the Liam Donnelly one quite strange, because I don't really, you know, I get it might be completely true, but he was taken off injured, so I don't really understand what the actual need is to mention that. That said, I completely get the Livingston one. I think that Stephen Robinson has taken the opportunity to maybe highlight the fact that a lot of Motherwell fans, possibly myself included, are very misguided and, you know, criticising him for not chucking in more youngsters. I think he's watched Adam Livingston, you know, get cramp, get fatigue, have to get taken off after about half hour in the park. And, you know, yes, I'm not going to say he's hanging him out to dry a little bit. I think Adam Livingston will probably be better off for hearing those comments. But I do think it's actually more about Stephen Robinson saying to the fans, look, there's a player that you've been clambering for me to put in for ages and, you know, abusing me for not doing so, and he can't even last the pace. That's exactly why I know what I'm doing. Stevie Craigan's telling me, you know, what I should be doing in terms of the young players. And regardless of the criticism, there is a good example of why it won't always work. So I get that. But I do think there is that kind of, you know, I don't know, I find the interviews and stuff kind of strange at times. It's almost as though, you know, nobody kind of has any, I don't know. I just find it very strange, some of the comments. Some of it seems unnecessary. But then again, as I said, in terms of the Livingston comments, I actually think that was actually well played by Robinson, because it is something that, you know, myself and other Motherwell fans will have been guilty of this season.
Yeah, I think it's a, sorry, I'll go here.
Go on.
Just now, but I'd say it's the kick up the arse at the right time as well. It's because it's a tipping point. You look at guys like Campbell and Cadden, who he's had a great deal of praise for getting themselves up to speed, getting their physicality right. And then you also look at guys like Dom Thomas, Ross McLean, who, even when he's talking about bringing Jake Hasty back from loan, I don't know whether Ross McLean's a season-long loan, but I know he's out of contract at the end of the season. He's not been able to get himself to the physical stature that he needs to be for the first team. So Livingston can look at these two who have drop down the levels, or the likes of Cadden and Campbell, who have become integral parts of the team. So there is a tipping point, and if Adam Livingston looks at guys like Turnbull, Cadden, Campbell, and takes heed of that, then he will also go on to be a success. But he could just as easily go the other way, and he needs a wee reminder of that.
I think everything that you said there about Adam Livingston was 100% bang on. Did you say, like, Ross McLean and things like this? Talk of Ray McKinnon taking him to wherever he is now as well. I think it was him that took him to, is it, where is he on loan? Is it Morton? Well, wherever it is. Ray McKinnon, I think, took him there. Then he's moved somewhere else. I'm glad you mentioned it as well, Jay, there about the Liam Donnelly thing, because when I heard the interview, I thought, hold on, he was injured rather than it was a fitness thing. And surely if it was then a fitness thing,
it should be on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Liam Donnelly's went up to him and says, no, Gaffer, I'm 100% fit here, I'll play. And maybe that's why he's having a dig at him. But surely, within 10 minutes, the two guys who were, struggling or whatever with their injuries, are 15 minutes subbed off. And I said to, this is, we've brought these guys back far too early. This is a bit of a farce. And after I heard the comments, I thought, was he injured or was he just blown out his arse? What's happening here? But it seems a weird thing to say, especially, you know, if he did pick up a knock or something like that.
It looks like an impact injury, doesn't it? Because he gets back in and I think it's Kieran Tierney, and he blocks the ball and it goes out for a corner. And at that point, he's on the ground and he's clearly not going to be able to continue. But I thought it looked quite obvious to be an injury. And the fact that he kind of singled out both Livingston and Donnelly and didn't even acknowledge the injury to Peter Hartley as well was somewhat strange. I would say in the kind of post-match, either deal with all three injuries or none of them and leave it till a couple of days later when you're previewing the Hearts game in front of the press, because by that point it's not as raw and you're maybe a bit more considered than after the heat of a 90-minute game, which was quite high octane, quite high intensity. You've got the late goal, the adrenaline's possibly still going, and you maybe say a few things that you're going to regret, and maybe say that Stephen Robinson did that in this case.
I honestly don't know where the Liam Donnelly things came from, unless there's something, that we didn't see. As you say, maybe he's just, adrenaline's pumping and he's just saying things here, because, it was a decent point to get, and, he then started having digs at people.
But I think we look back in this week, three games, we're going to have weeks with three games in them quite a lot, starting with St Johnstone again, then we'll have Celtic, and then St Mirren. In fact, four games in 11 days, if you include Kilmarnock and Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. The results, I would have said that 1 point out of 9, I wouldn't have settled for that. The performance at Livingston was very, very poor. Much better against Celtic, wasn't at the Hearts game, so wouldn't like to go in the limited highlights I've seen. But would we all agree that the 1 point out of 9, particularly considering that now you look at St Mirren seeming to be picking up points, Dundee get a good point yesterday off the back of a great result against Hamilton midweek. We're still in the heat of a battle, 6 points above bottom spot. The other teams seem to be looking in better shape than they were certainly 5 or 6 weeks ago. I don't know whether we could be very satisfied, if anything at all, with a start to December.
All I would say on that is that to me is one of those things that you can kind of make go either way. It wasn't, I remember earlier on this season, I think we were talking Sparta and you kind of went through every game we'd played up to that point and kind of said, what would I expect for that game? And I think at that point you kind of worked out we're maybe 1 point behind where you thought we should be. I think it's all very well saying 1 point in 9 isn't great, isn't good enough. And yes, when it's kind of done in that very sort of basic, minimalised way, then I would agree. But I think if you break it down, going to Livingston who, yes, had maybe went a few weeks without scoring, but had such a great start to the season. Was sitting, you know, as high as third not too long ago in the campaign. So you're going away there, then playing Celtic at home, and then going to Tynecastle. I think if you break that down and look at those, I think you would probably have been happy with a point against Livy, and you would probably have accepted that losing to Celtic at home and losing to Hearts away would be very, very possible, if not likely outcomes. So when you actually break it down, I think 1 point from nine is possibly where we would expect to be.
I was going to say, I think it's hard to disagree with when you break it down so sensibly, Jay. But, you know, when you look at it, after getting, you know, a good result against Celtic, you would be thinking we should be doing better against Livy. And Hearts away is always Hearts away, as you say. You know, I think before the Celtic game, I tweeted that if we get anything at all, it's a bonus. And, you know, if I wasn't busy on Saturday, I'd have probably said the exact same thing. So I think 1 point does seem all right among out of three games, but it's again the way we lost in against Livingston sounded awful. Hearts didn't sound great, but you know, it's one of those things.
I'm certainly not saying that I'm happy with it. I think it's just the language which you like. I mean, I would aspire to more than that. I would hope to, you know, would hope for more than that. But I think that in terms of expectation levels, in terms of what's acceptable, you know, we are where we are. We budget for 10th. We've had a poor start to the season and we have taken a point from three games that I think a point was probably likely.
Yeah, I suppose what I was kind of trying to get at is it's still pretty rubbish, isn't it? It's just
I was going to say, I do automatically, obviously recognise the complete irony in me mentioning budgets after slaying Robinson for it, but there we go. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's just not great. I'll not be there on Saturday, and I don't get myself too down about missing the games. I kind of hoped I wouldn't get back this way. I felt it for a short spell under McGee, and his departure and Stephen Robinson came back in kind of coincided with, despite the fact the football didn't get that much better, it just felt like there was more of a desire to go to the game inside me, and I just don't really have it just now. But hopefully wee moments like Danny Johnson's equaliser, or you do look at, there's been points in this season that have been good despite the fact that it has been a pretty dross campaign up until now. You would still have enough for some season highlights with late goals against Rangers and Celtic and David Turnbull's great winner against Dundee, going to St Mirren and getting a good result when we were in terrible form. But it would still be quite a short DVD, let's be honest. Andy Rose has, well, he's not left. We've all been trying to work this out for the last half an hour, where Andy Rose actually is just now, or whether he actually ever played with us at all and didn't play with Seattle Whitecaps. Or, oh no, it's not Seattle Whitecaps, they're Seattle Sounders. He's going to Vancouver Whitecaps. The deal done, his registration apparently in the MLS is held by Seattle. He's joined Vancouver. That deal will go through on the 1st of January when our transfer window opens. Motherwell won't receive a fee because they had a gentleman's agreement with Andy Rose. If a bid from America came in, he could go. And I think that's pretty much summed up from what I understand of it. Mm-hmm. And it took me quite a long time to come to this conclusion. Mm-hmm. Andy Rose, for me, busted very good last season. A very big part of our midfield. Big part of our success this season, whether it be through injuries, falling out of favour, he's not really done very much. And if this had been announced 6 months ago, I'd have been very disappointed. But I'm fairly nonplussed about it tonight, it must be said. All I would hope is that he signed a contract of better terms in the summer, and that will mean we free up a wage that Stephen Robinson can try and bring in a central midfielder who will make more of an impact going forward.
Yeah, I think again you've summed it up there. I like Andy Rose. I think he was getting a lot of stick undeservedly. But this season, albeit through fitness, whatever, you know, I think there's a few whispers of other reasons in there and all. But and again, it was always one of those things where I think everybody in the world knew he wanted to go back to America. Even when he signed his extension last year, you know, I think he just didn't have an offer, but it was one of those things where it was well known he was wanting to go back to America. And as he says, we've obviously said to him, sign up again. You know, if you get an offer, we'll let you go. Which is, again, fair enough. I don't have any real problems with that. It's, you know, if he was magnificent and, you know, worth £1 million, I suppose then everybody would be upset about it. But as you say, the whole sort of thing was pretty confusing in regards to how it was released. The Whitecaps putting out that he was going, Andy Rose who recording the video before Mullough had even acknowledged the fact.
To be fair, it was quite a nondescript video, wasn't it? 9 seconds long of him talking about how he couldn't wait to join the Whitecaps family.
Has he played for Vancouver before?
I don't think so. I look him up while I'm speaking, but the last time I was checking it, I'm sure he started in Seattle. And
with the Seattle Whitecaps, aye?
The Seattle Whitecaps. I think they played against the Chicago Bulls, and then, you know, the Washington Redskins and all that. So
it made 91 appearances for Seattle Whitecaps Sounders.
Yeah. So I think I don't know anything really about the MLS. You know, I think maybe Alan Burrows, he's probably your best man to ask about it if you get my chance, because there was talk of $50,000 going between Seattle and Vancouver, but I think that's more to do with the registration rights, as in caps, salary cap, and things like that they've got in their setup. Because I'm pretty sure that the MLS own all the players and then sort of dish them out somehow. Again, don't really know much about it, but I'm sure that was what I'd last understood any time I tried to understand it. But fair play, Andy Rose was a decent enough player. You know, his fitness issues this year, I mean, he's not been very much involved. And I think the last two games at Fir Park against Celtic, well, the last two times he got penalties, I'm sure it was him that dived in and gave the penalties away. So, you know, fair play to him. Hope he does well. And he says he's come back home, well, to be near his family. Apparently his family's out there.
Yeah, Jed, I think we often say exactly the same when a player leaves. Particularly one like Andy Rose, who came across very well in interviews, played a big part last season, in a season which we got to two cup finals. This season he hasn't done very much. I don't think any of us are going to lose much sleep over Andy Rose leaving, but I think he gets thanked for his time at the club. We move on, and hopefully the manager has already got a few targets in mind for replacing his place. While he's not a regular starter this season, we need to fill the void in the squad, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with what's been said. I think he was an underrated player. I think he was one of those guys who was obviously sent out to do a bit of the dirty work, and those guys are always the guys that, you know, the boo boys tend to pick up on first and foremost when things aren't going your way. So I think he did get a bit of a hard time, you know, at times. But, you know, he chipped in, he did well, and I've, you know, got no issues with him. You know, obviously, it's been one of those things where, you know, I suppose also if we're going to kind of set ourselves as a family club and a club where players want to come and play their football, then things like a, you know, obviously I saw it in the official website, you know, a gentleman's agreement because his green card runs out on the 1st of January, you know, and it's just makes sense for him to go back there if he can on that date. I think that's something to be quite, you know, to respect about our club, I think, because I think there's a lot of clubs wouldn't entertain doing something like that. So when, you know, further down the line, when you're looking to bring a player in, it's little things like that that you can maybe use to your advantage as well, because, you know, potential new signings know that they're going to be looked after, and at times the club will actually look out for their best interests and not always the club. So I think it's one of those deals that I think, you know, I think suits everybody. I don't think there'll be very many fans will be massively disappointed, but I think the majority will wish him all the best. He and his family get to obviously go back to where they want to. Mother will free up a wage. We obviously know from Robinson's comments recently that that's something he wants to do in order to get a couple of players in. And of course, you know,
see if you mention the budget one more time, I'm cutting this fucking call.
No, but in fairness, that is completely irrelevant. I mean, you know, we know that we're going to have to bring in some players. Although in saying that, you're talking about central midfield. I would like to think, you know, the emergency, somebody like Turnbull, and I suppose the assumption that Biggie was possibly going to leave before now. And I know that, you know, perhaps Robinson's feelings about Biggie seem to fluctuate week on week, going by some post-match interviews. But for me, the actual...
He's solely responsible for losing every goal we've conceded this season.
But I was just going to say, I think my priority would be up front, I think, at the moment. Or at least, you know, perhaps a central midfielder that will create. You know, that's where we're really, really struggling at the moment. You know, we just can't create anything. I think we look solid enough. Don't get me wrong, I would like to see the likes of Tate over on the right and things like that. So maybe a left-sided, you know, a left wing back or a left back. But for me, the issues we really have at the moment is, you know, as I said earlier, scoring goals. So if we can get someone in, if we can free up enough of a wage that we can get somebody who's actually decent enough to be in the starting lineup, not a 12 to 18 player, a player who can go in there and can either create something or score goals himself. Because if we don't start doing that, then we're going to continue to be involved in that four-team league at the bottom.
Just a final one to wrap us up. There has obviously been quite high-profile news stories on the racial abuse suffered by Christian Mbulu against Hearts at the weekend. Two Hearts fans banned indefinitely after being arrested on the Saturday evening. It's not a point scoring exercise to mention this. There's just absolutely no place for it in modern society, never mind going to a football match and screaming obscenities as a player due to their race. Really, let's hope these two bastards get the book thrown at them. They shouldn't just be banned from the football, as far as I'm concerned. It should be a more stringent punishment than that. Hearts have taken action quickly. Fair play to them for that. I identified it after the game in September. I thought there was just a real poisonous element to a small section of that Hearts supporter. Of course, all supporters do have their share of arseholes, and this has come to the fore again on Saturday. But I think the most important thing, Jay, is to wish Christian Mbulu all the best. Hopefully, as a young guy, it hasn't affected him too badly, and he can bounce back and get back to what he does best, and that's obviously playing football.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's one of those, you know, I said earlier about how Tynecastle is one of my favourite stadiums because of the way it's laid out, because the fans are right on top of you. So if you're a young player warming up and you're new to the first team, I mean, that could be absolutely horrific. And it is the kind of thing that, you know, racist abuse in particular, you always hear about, particularly, you know, perhaps players who have retired now, you know, that maybe when they were younger, they actually considered chucking it because it just wasn't worth it. And you don't want to see that creeping back in. You know, it's the same day that we've got a lot in the news about Raheem Sterling down south. And I don't think those two things are, you know, coincidental. I'm not going to get into politics. I got enough of that in the day job. But I think we have got a rise of the kind of the far right element in Britain and across Europe at the moment. Racism is becoming more sort of normalised, both in the media and just in society in general. You've got guys like Tommy Robinson having their views legitimised by, you know, being featured all over the media. Everybody knows who he is, even though he's just an absolute, you know, a fraudster, an arsehole, a football hooligan, somebody who should be nowhere near the media. Everybody now knows who he is because we live in a society now where there seems to be more emphasis on almost normalising the views of the far right and racist and fascist views. So as much as I agree that the book needs to be thrown at these two guys, I think it needs to be, you know, taken into consideration that, not that this is going to become the norm, but I think we need to recognise that there is a rise of kind of anti-immigrant, sort of that kind of racist, fascist, sort of Islamophobic, you know, all those kind of elements are starting to creep in a little bit into society as a whole. And it's just natural that that's going to end up showing itself at football stadiums. So it's important how we deal with it. It's not just a case of chucking them in jail or fining them or banning from the stadium. We need to make sure that we're actively trying to stamp it out, because we've spent so long in this country in particular trying to stamp out sectarianism, by and largely being unsuccessful about it. You know, with that, the last thing we also need is racism creeping in as well.
Yeah, but I don't think there's much to add to it. I don't think we really want to spend too much time discussing it, but I don't think, by the same token, of course, we can't ignore it, can we? It's happened, and there's been incidents like this, high-profile ones over the last couple of years in football, and it brings that element to the forefront. These people, we don't want anywhere near football stadiums.
course not, no. It's something that I've never really understood, to be honest with you. That insectarianism, to be honest with you, I don't understand that enough. I don't understand why people would even think along those lines in general. But again, as you say, hopefully the two guys get the book thrown at them. Heart, fair play to Hearts as well, by the way. I think there's a few times where Hearts have, you know, Hearts fans have done some dodgy things. And Anne Budge seems to be on the ball. She's just nae messing. Bang, there you go. Bang, no coming back. So fair play to them. Just on it as well, because as I say, you know, I wasn't there. I read about these sort of things online, basically through the BBC and stuff. But what actually happened? Does anybody know what actually happened? Sorry, because obviously I know he took some racial abuse, but was this just as he was warming up, or what was it? What was the deal?
I honestly wouldn't be able to tell you, but Stephen Robinson had mentioned it in his post-match as well. So clearly there was more than just the. Mm-hmm. Everyone seemed to be well aware of what was going on, but
I mean, I'm just having a wee look at the BBC. It says Police Scotland have been given footage which shows about 20 fans in the main stand at Tynecastle shouting comments at the 22-year-old as he warms up. So I'm assuming that they're insinuating that the, you know, the racist comments were kind of shouted then.
And it's kind of not weird, because there's cameras everywhere at football, but it's, you know, it's fair play to whoever caught, you know, got the footage there, and you know, they can then punish these people for the crime they've committed. So fair play to them as well. But it's just I don't understand. I honestly just don't understand these things.
Yeah, it must also be quite difficult for Hearts to manage, given they have black players in their side as well. Look, I don't know how comfortable you would be playing for a side where you've got that element to your support. So a disappointing day, and dragging the Scottish game back, certainly with incidents like that. But as I say, hopefully Christian is keeping his head up. I'm sure he'll have a great deal of support from the football club, and he's certainly got the backing of the supporters as well. So hopefully Christian is okay, and I'm not saying we move on from it. Let's hope that these guys are punished suitably and we do eradicate this, because there's absolutely no place for it in football.
Well said.
Guys, I think that's us for this week. We need a more positive podcast, and one day it will happen.
Aye, hopefully next week.
The whole, you know, it lets you get it off your chest as well, you know. And I'm sure there'll be people who listen shouting at their, I've got to say radios, but their phones, aren't it? People listen on their phones these days. I was going to say iPods as well, but nobody's got an iPod either anymore.
Well, this is the second time I've got it off my chest as well, considering I spent an hour speaking to Scott Kennedy last night, and then the sound didn't work. So 2 hours of getting it off my chest, and then I don't have to actually go to McDermott Park on Saturday. So hopefully I'm hearing great things from you guys.
Aye, that's it. I'm planning on going. I think Buster's planning on going as well. So at least we don't need to start next week's podcast with "Nobody was there."
We were there on the Wednesday, though.
We left after 35 minutes. That'll be next week's. We managed 35 minutes.
Right, well, that'll be 35 minutes more than we got from the Hearts game, so that's a good start. You've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Never love me back.
I never noticed that. And now we're just talking, talking.